We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Hi, everybody. Todd McKim, and happy holidays to each and all as we get you ready for the Red Box Bowl Monday at Levi's Stadium, the Bears against Illinois. I hope you had a great holiday season. Of course, the new year right around the corner. And for the Bears, second consecutive season in which they participate in a bowl game. And joining us now to start with will be Justin Wilcox a little bit later on, former Bear quarterback, and then my broadcasting partner, Mike Pawlowski, will reminisce a little bit about bowl experiences that he had and also recap the year as well. But first of all, with head coach Justin Wilcox, let's talk about being in a bowl game for the second consecutive year, and that's a big deal. Hasn't happened for quite some time. Well, what does it mean for you, your program, your players, et cetera, to be in the postseason for two straight years?
Well, there's a lot to that. The chance to win another game and the reward for the current team, it helps in recruiting. It helps with the development of the players who haven't got as many reps. It also helps you prepare for your off-season conditioning because you're not off for an entire month of December and the first half of January. So there's a lot of positives to being in a bowl game, and that's why we need to expect to be here and continue to raise our level of expectations on bowl games and being successful in those games.
And then for some coaches, staffs, players, it's either the end of, in this case, 2019, and or it's the beginning of 2020. Mm-hmm. How is it for you?
Both. I think it's both. We talked about that in our team meeting this week, that it's the chance to finish this season the right way. If we go out and play our best, we'll have a chance to do that and also create momentum going into next season. And so I think it really does carry weight for both seasons.
What did it say about your football team that you went through a tough patch, kind of like what Illinois went through, similar situation during the middle of the season, you lost consecutive games, but to finish it strong and then to be able to build some momentum?
Yeah, just the psyche, the competitiveness, the grit that they showed to finish it, to get us to a bowl game and win some big games down the stretch after we did have a really tough month. I mean, we struggled there for a while, but guys kept practicing and the meetings were good, and we just kind of have to keep them going, and they did a great job of that. Like I said, their psyche and the mentality was good, even though it wasn't a lot of fun at times. Yeah.
You also have an interesting situation, and this happens at this time of the year vis-a-vis coaching changes. Your offensive coordinator, Bill Baldwin, has become the new head coach at Cal Poly. Nick Edwards, your running back coach, is going to join him there as the offensive coordinator. But both of those guys are going to coach your team in the bowl game. How was that decision made, and how important is it to have that continuity through the bowl game?
Well, the timing of recruiting now, how that works with the signing day, and then it goes dead, so you really can't do anything on campus. And we're fortunate that Bo and Nick are going to stay with us, and they wanted to do it. We were absolutely thrilled that they wanted to, and we're going to be able to be here with our team. And I think it gives our team a better chance to play at our best, and really appreciate them for, you know, doing that. And it's a way to celebrate what they've done and how much they've done for our program. And the fact that they could do both is really big.
How do you also mix in the pleasure, the fun of a bowl experience? It's going to be across the bay in San Francisco with practicing and focusing on the game. What's your philosophy on that?
Just staying in the moment. And so there's going to be a lot of activities, and we want the guys to enjoy the activities, you know, being at a bowl game. You know, that's part of it. And the families and everybody involved that helped us get there, that's kind of part of the reward is doing the tours and going to the Warriors games and the dinners and all those things. But when it's football time, when it's time to meet and practice, that we're all in on football. And so our guys have done a nice job of that. And we'll talk about that with them more once we get to the bowl site. But they've done a nice job of that. And that's the way it needs to be.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Illinois. We'll talk more in the pregame show the day of the game. But Illinois, 6-6, and I mentioned earlier, a little bit like the Bears, they went through a tough stretch where they lost four straight, but they pop out of that four-game losing streak and beat Wisconsin, who at that point in time, people are saying, well, maybe Wisconsin can be in the Final Four. They came from behind to do it in the fourth quarter and won that game. They also beat Michigan State, which is a good football team. Again, they had to come from behind to beat them as well. Finished with losses to Iowa and Northwestern. Well, what have you seen on tape from this Illinois team?
Well, I think we talked about the mentality earlier that we tried to show, and some of the perseverance. I think you saw that with them and the way they continued to play and beat an excellent Wisconsin team and came from behind to beat Michigan State to become bowl eligible. And I think when you look at their program, they're very, very complimentary. I mean, offense, defense, and special teams, they play as a team. They play very hard. They're disciplined and tough. They don't make a lot of mistakes. And I think that has a lot to do. It absolutely has a lot to do with their leadership and Coach Smith and how they do things there. And I've seen them grow over the last few years because I was at Wisconsin when he mm-hmm. first got there. And you see the difference in the team, and it is evident.
Yeah, they feel, talking to some of their people, maybe they've turned the corner. They play in the Big Ten West Division. And when you looked at the West Division preseason and how the West Division finished, it's almost like you flipped some of the teams around because they were picked last in that division and ended up with 4 wins and 5 losses in conference play. And so they did a terrific job. And again, we'll talk more about Illinois when we get into the pregame show on Monday. We'll be on the air at noon. The kick lift after 1 o'clock at Levi's Stadium. And if you want to go to the ball game, calbears.com, all your information. Go Bears, the phone number to call to get your tickets, because we want a big crowd in favor of the Bears. All right, let's talk a little bit about recruiting. You had the signing date a week or so back. Signed more than 24 players, as it turned out. Any one characteristic that when you look at all of the guys combined that stood out for you?
Well, we had a lot of guys that participated in winning programs and winning teams, and that's a big part of it. Not everybody comes from that. There's certain circumstances, but, you know, guys that have won championships and been a part of those type of programs. And then we were heavy on the skill positions, you know, the receiver and DB, the running backs, quarterbacks. Those were bigger needs for us, just the way our roster is shaping up. And I think we identified some guys there early, and we're able to close on those guys. And the linemen that we took are big guys. You know, the couple offensive linemen and the defensive linemen are really big guys. So feel great about them. You know, it's just the beginning, though. I think, you know, sometimes in this day and age, people see recruiting as what the culmination, when in fact it's really just the beginning. And so I'm excited to get those guys here and get them into our program and help them continue to grow on and off the field.
I know a couple of the areas, just the numbers game. Wide receiver, you wanted to upgrade in that situation. You got numbers, and you got a little bit of everything there, it looked like. And we'll throw tight end in as well. You signed two tight ends. DJ Rogers, considered one of the best in the country out of Washington, maybe the headliner there. But you got tall guys, you got fast guys, you got bigger guys too at some of the wide receiver spots. Just talk about what you were looking for at that position.
You said it. I think there's a good mix when you look at the you know, Jeremiah Hunter is kind of a prototypical. He's got length, he's got speed and quickness. He does a lot, catches the ball down the field. He catches quick games and tunnel screens for big plays. He's going to continue to develop physically when he gets here, but is a pretty electric guy and makes some big plays for his team. And then you got, you know, Tommy Christakos is a big mismatch guy. He's a big, tall, strong receiver. He can also kick off. I think Mason Mangum shows big playability. Justin Baker's kind of in the different role where he's that slot guy that, you know, fly sweeps and option routes and pitch it to him out of the backfield. So different roles for those type of guys. And that's good to have some balance. And you mentioned the tight ends. We're excited about that crew as well. So we got to continue to build the skill on the offensive side of the ball. We were just down in numbers a bit, so it was going to be a bigger class, and we like the guys that we signed.
A couple of those recruits that signed have been at practices for the bowl game. Jaden Casey, highly recruited kid, the quarterback, and Ever Johnson. I mean, he's a large human being. He's as big as we've seen on campus in a long time. Defensive line, you mentioned size there. You've got the three guys you signed, 310, 280, and 330, Ricky Correa played on that state championship team, along with a really good football team. Mangum, another guy, Mangum. He played on the state championship team in Texas as well. But the size there, 310, 280, and 330.
Yeah, and Stanley, they actually had a great team at St. Louis over there in Hawaii as well.
So is Cal Lee still coaching
still
there?
Cal Lee, who is a legend in high school coaching and at St. Louis and has been there for a long, long time. And I got a chance to see him at school, which was really neat. And he has a history with people that I know. And anyway, so Stanley is 310 might be a bit conservative, especially after the meal that we had at Stanley's house with myself and Coach Tui and Andrew Browning. And then I think, you know, he's kind of your prototype interior guy. He's probably 6'2". He is wide, really wide and thick, and he's got really quick feet. So excited about Stanley. And then Ricky Correa, 330 may be a bit conservative for Ricky. And Ricky's taller now. Ricky's 6'4 plus. He can, all those guys can play more than one position, either our nose, our in position, our three technique, or our G and nickel. So really big bodies. And then even our defensive end, you know, being at 280, he is another big, strong guy out of Orange Vista and, you know, more explosive, kind of quick twitch, but all have really good size. And now we got to get in here and develop them.
And then the other position that we talked about, wide receiver, a lot of guys, DB, we don't know how many are going to be available, you know, for next year based on, you know, Cam Bynum and some of the other guys maybe thinking about the National Football League. But I want to point out Trey Pastor. First of all, he's a really good football player, but he probably did. And you need a guy or two or three guys like that in your class to kind of bring everybody else along. He was as vocal and as good a recruiter as anybody on the staff because he was all in from the get-go.
I tell you what, Trey is a heck of a player. He's a big athletic guy. He's played safety, DB. He played on offense and very productive. And from the moment he committed, he was one of the best recruiters we had. And Trey has got a great personality. He's easy to talk to. And we were communicating nonstop on, you know, what was going on with recruiting. He was just like he was a member of the staff at that point. And so there's, you know, each year, especially when you have a bigger class, there's you hope to have guys like that. And he was definitely one of them. He was the catalyst in this class in terms of bringing people together.
And then you also signed a punter from Australia. That's kind of been in vogue now in college football. What is it about what they're doing over there in Australia that's been so conducive to a lot of programs in the country now signing young men from Australia?
Well, I'm trying to make it as short as I can. It's they have a great niche, and these guys grow up, you know, when they're 3 and 4 years old, they get Australian rules football because that's their sport. They grow up playing that. When you play that game, you learn how to kick, and a lot of times kick with both feet, and you're passing with your feet. You know, they pass the ball by kicking it, and it's to a moving target. So your accuracy is just being developed. So they play that for 15 years, and then they try to play professionally, which Jameson almost did. He was actually working in the AFL, but then if they don't quite make it, they have this group of guys called ProKick, and they've trained a lot of people, and they're really talented punters and kickers, and they essentially have this pipeline going. And I think there's 3 to 4 NFL players right now who come from that ProKick. Mm-hmm. And if you think about, there's only a certain amount of jobs available in the world, and they come from this one little place because they have a niche, you know, that they've filled. And Jameson, very talented guy, a little bit older. And one of the unique things, he's never punted in a football game before. Really? You know, he is a, we've seen the skill and we're totally comfortable. We've seen him do it on tape and all those things, but the first time he punts is in a game is going to be the first time he's ever punted in a college football game or a football game period. Yeah. So he's excited to be here. He was great in terms of the recruiting process. And now all the coaches, we're fighting to see who gets to be the area recruiter for New Zealand and Australia. So we'll see.
Hawaii, New Zealand, Australia. That's a pretty good gig if you can get it. That's for sure. Well, you guys have been to Italy as well with some off-season camps I know you put together. So that's a pretty good reward as well. So you got a lot of competition for travel, no question about it. And the beauty and the downside of recruiting is it never stops because you sign this class and you just keep on going. There's another signing period in February based on numbers. What are your thoughts there?
You know, we could sign a guy or two. It's probably not likely, you know, it's less likely, but
what about grad transfers? Because usually that's like at the end of the spring when they graduate.
So we potentially could have a couple spots open up and we are actively watching the grad transfer market and the transfer portal. We get daily updates on those in terms of high school players. You know, it's, we're pretty much done. And so something unique would have to happen. So you mentioned it. We're already on to next year and beyond with the evaluations and going out and watching people. And it's just the way the recruiting calendars change with this early signing day. And it's, I think it's great. And I mean, we're in favor of it being even earlier if people will do that. So it's just the way that the recruiting has changed in the last few years.
Well, congratulations on the class. Good luck in the bowl game. And one of the nice things about the class is that the kids that committed to you, for the most part, stayed with you as well. Not a lot of flipping, flopping back and forth as you headed down the home stretch. So that was awesome as well. All right, Coach, we will talk to you prior to the bowl game. Have a good week of practice and enjoy the festivities in San Francisco. And good luck in the bowl.
Thanks. Happy holidays, everybody. Go Bears.
All right, head coach Justin Wilcox. A reminder again, if you want to go to the game, you don't have your tickets, get on the phone, Go Bears, one way to do it, or get on the website, calbears.com, for all your bowl information. Joining me now on the Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, is Mike Pawlowski, broadcast partner. He's up in the booth doing a terrific job for us, a former Bear quarterback, as the Bears get ready to take on Illinois in the Red Box Bowl in Levi's Stadium. Let's go back to your days. Your final collegiate game, it was the Citrus Bowl, right?
Yep.
1992. A while back. Let's first of all, what's it like for a player to get the opportunity? In your case, a January 1st bowl game. I think Brent Musburger and Dick Vermeil were the guys calling the broadcast for TV, so you know it was a big game when Musburger's there. What's it like for a player to get a chance to play in a bowl game?
Well, first off, very exciting to be on the podcast here. Oh. Like I talk about it all the time. It's awesome to be a part of it. So this is great. Bowl game prep is awesome when you're older. When you're younger, it makes the season seem so long. Think about it. You're just coming out of high school, right? If you're a true freshman and you're used to playing 10 games. And then if you go to playoffs, you might get 12, 13. If you win it all, you get 14, right? You come into bowl prep in college with camp. Like this season has gone on forever for the freshmen. So they get a little bit of break, they come back, and now they're at it and they can feel the energy from bowl prep. It's like the big game. Only every game is like the big game. And every day is like a big time practice. So they get that energy back up. For the seniors, for the juniors, the guys who've been around it for a long time, that pride of earning this kind of distinction, going to a bowl game, getting to play for something more, right? Everybody's, the goal is always to get to a bowl game. And then you get to it, you're like, oh, wow, this is what it's like, right? So now second year in a row for Cal, that's another big piece. We went to the Copper Bowl my junior year, and we had no idea what it was like going into it, no idea what to expect going into it. Had a great time. That team was awesome to be a part of. Like, they had so much fun with everything they did. but had a great time at the Copper Bowl. But then going into the Citrus Bowl, we knew what to expect. And so that just made it so much better, made the prep better. Every rep counted, but it was still fun. We did some things during bowl week for both those teams that still to this day live in the stories of the guys that you played with. And they were just, those teams were so much fun to be a part of. And so these guys are creating those kind of memories for themselves, being a part of that type of team, those kind of characters. You know, think about, guys are going to be talking about being on the same team with Evan Weaver, you know, later on down the line, and what that was like and all the stories that go back. They'll be doing stuff during this week that, you know, we'll never hear about, but will be lifelong memories for these guys. And that's how it was for us in the Copper Bowl and for the Citrus Bowl. And it just makes, it's a big payoff at the end of a season. It's more work, you get to improve, but it's a big payoff for the end of a long season.
Yeah, no question about that. And so the guys get the chance to play that extra game. To win it for the Bears this year would be, in my opinion, Mike, another big step in the progression of what Justin Wilcox is trying to get accomplished. Because last year they went to a bowl game. All right, it was nice. We hadn't been for a couple of years in the decade of the 2000s. We hadn't been to a lot of them. But now it's back-to-back. And if you win, because that's the goal for this year's team, is to win that one because they had the bad taste last year. Now you get to 8 wins, and now you kind of continue that ascension. So winning this game is really important, I think, for this football team.
I think it's huge. Going to a bowl game, like I said, it's enormous. You go to the game, it's great. Nobody wants to lose that thing. I mean, this is the prize I've been working for all this time. And you go and you lose it, you're like, oh. And so it kind of leaves that dirty taste in your mouth. Definitely going in with the want to win and with a chance to win and the belief in winning. Again, it's just like anything else. One thing Justin's done really well is getting players to buy in. Any head coach has to be able to get his team to buy in. If you can't do that, you'll never be successful. And because Justin's message is honest, it's true, it's of high character, right? And all those things matter at Cal. Because here's something, I'll give you a football insider tip. Stanford, Cal, Michigan, UCLA, Virginia, you know, schools like that, really smart kids coming in. If you lie to them, or if you tell them something they know is not true, you try to bend the edges, they're going to catch it. They know. They're smart kids, and so they're going to catch it. Justin hasn't done that with this team. Justin has set the standard, has set the expectation, has done everything honestly, truthfully, with integrity, and the kids know that. And so getting all that set up, building that, getting that belief, the win solidifies that, right? It crystallizes everything he's been telling you that, hey, not only will we go to a bowl, but we'll win that bowl too. And so all of that comes together in the belief, in the buy-in. And, you know, they talk about having your team on board. He'll have his team on board, and a win really just solidifies that. Now, it'll be a different team next year, but they'll have that memory. You hear me say it on the air all the time. Nothing bonds a team like winning, right? My head coach, Mike Daly, said winning is the glue that binds a team together. And it absolutely is. And winning a bowl game is pretty strong super glue.
No question about it. Go back to your Citrus Bowl.
The parts of it I remember.
Well, you remember the good parts. You threw for about 232. And I think Russell White went for a buck three. And Treggs had a return for a touchdown as well. I mean, you guys crushed Clemson. And I had to laugh at the quote that I saw from Treggs. And he was pretty good on quotes. Throughout his career, some of them turned out good. Some of them haunt him to this day, right?
This day, yeah.
But one of them he had is, you know, it was East Coast, West Coast kind of thing, ACC, Pac-12, Pac-10. It was the Thoroughbreds against the Elephants is what he called them. I mean, and you guys ran some plays that hadn't been in the playbook that you brought up. Bowl games are kind of fun in that regard because you see that quite a bit where you got what I call alumni plays. And who knows what the Bears will have in their bag of tricks, but how much fun is it kind of running those things in practice, knowing that you kind of got them in the bag and they're just fun to see?
If you are not running trick plays in bowl games, your coaches need an attitude adjustment, right? This is the payoff. This is the fun part. I'm going to go back to the Citrus Bowl first to kind of justify where Treggs is coming from, because I love telling the story. We go down to Orlando and literally every reporter, including our beat guys, there were maybe two guys, John Rockmus and Jeff Ferrato, who believed that we were going to win that game. And everybody else was like, oh, I mean, it's great to get a game, but oh, Clemson, oh.
Well, Clemson, I think, had the number one defense in the country, going in, yeah.
Yeah, they were giving up like 49 yards on the ground a game. No team had scored over 20. I just saw the stat the other day. I didn't know it at the time. But over like 23 points on them in 7 years or something. And so they're like, oh, you know, so the Southern guys were the worst. Oh, it's so nice of you guys to come down here and, you know, play this game. I'm sorry, you know, but it's nice of you to come. I'm like, they had no idea. We went to the Epcot Center, and my offensive line and I and several other people made the trip around the world, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end of that trip around the world, we ended up back in the UK, and all the Clemson fans were in there. And they were doing that same stuff. They're like, oh, you guys are, you know, so nice you to come down and play. Sorry for what we're going to do to you. And I remember looking at one Clemson fan saying, you have no idea. We are going to kick your ass. Like, you have no idea what's coming in this game. Because we knew, we saw film. We knew what this team was about. And so, that said, it was great to go out and beat their ass. But we had it for Oregon that year. We had put in the fumble Ruski. And for, I don't remember what other game it was, but we had several trick plays that we had run during the season. And Mooch was great with trick plays. He loved having a trick play in every game. He had great names for him, like the throwback to Russell, the double reverse throwback to Russell was called 28 Tina, because we had run it the year before to get to the Copper Bowl, and it was touchdown in Arizona, because we knew it was the Copper Bowl coming up, right? And so he had these names for him. We knew him, and that team was such a group of characters, loved running them. Loved running trick plays. And we put it on Clemson early. Yep. And so being able to run these trick plays and to come out the gate with a trick play was awesome. Literally the electricity in the stands, the team knew it, right? That's the confidence that winning brings you. And it just makes it so much fun. So that's why I say, if a coach is not running trick plays in a bowl game, he needs an attitude adjustment, because that's what it's all about. I mean, have fun. This is when the game is fun, man. We're in a bowl game. We earned something. Let's make the most of it. Let's make it fun. And that is also that buy-in, right? The confidence, everything else, that brings your team together. And so when they see you doing that, they know you have the confidence in them. It's like rewarding a kid. Hey, good job. You know, pat on the back. That's what the trick plays are. And that's why it's so much fun when you accomplish them. They never work in practice. Never work in practice. They always suck in practice. But you come out in the game and you run them, and they work great.
It's also good if you're just a fan, or if you're maybe a recruit. And you're like, hey, these guys are fun. They do some fun stuff.
Yeah.
And so I want to be part of the fun stuff, winning as well, but the fun stuff. So I think those are big. And I love watching the coaches that do it and the coaches that don't do it. Now, you have to have the right situation. You can't just run the damn thing because you got it in the playbook. There's got to be a reason to do it. So we'll look forward to that on Monday afternoon. All right, let's talk about this Cal team this year, Mike. Great start. Go to Ole Miss. Win an SEC country, things are rolling, and then Chase Garbers gets hurt, and then it's kind of wandered in the wilderness for about a month. And I talked to this earlier to Justin during his segment of the podcast, what it meant for that team to come out of the wilderness and to come down the stretch and beat Stanford at Stanford and UCLA at UCLA, and what it did for this year's football team. When you look at this team and kind of the ups and downs, and still to get to 7 wins, what's your overall impression of this squad?
Well, that's a tome to start off. I mean, we could go on forever. There's a couple of things in there. For me, a huge one this year was watching Chase Garbers play the position, right? You know, rough year last year, a lot of trading back and forth with quarterbacks. It's never good for a quarterback's ego. It's, you know, your quarterback has to believe that they can pass through walls, period. And you have to have that faith, and that's what you need in that position, because you are literally making the decision to throw the ball into coverage, risking the interception every single time, and from decision to throw to deceleration, it's less than a second. And so you have to have such confidence in everything you do. And so last year was a rough year for Chase. The beginning of this season was rough for Chase, and he never let it out, right? He never showed it. He didn't see the frustration. And so I really felt for him. I like Chase a lot. He's a good kid. He has the tools to be a really good quarterback. And so the first 3 games were rough. You know, it was Davis was not pretty, and Washington got the win. You know, there were some flashes, but it was not pretty at the position. And then all North of a sudden, Texas. Yeah, North Texas was not good, period. But all of a sudden, Ole Miss. And holy crap, Chase Garbers can play the position. And like, as a quarterback, having been there, like, I was so proud of him for just that game alone, period. But then to watch him, you know, from there, and then Arizona State, he gets hurt. But he comes out against Arizona State. He's 9 for 12. He's really 11 for 12 because had that ball had a spike on it, he would have killed two receivers, hit him square in the chest. And the 12th ball was a contested fade ball. That, you know, that's, you're going to miss some of those. You're going to get some of those. So he's playing really well and he gets hurt. Ugh, you know, the hardest thing in football, period, is to be a backup quarterback, come off the bench and win games. It is so difficult. People have no idea. You're not getting the reps. You're not getting the time. You don't have the chemistry. Your team, they believe in you as a backup, right? Until you step in, and all of a sudden that huddle's a little different. And so, really tough for Devon. Really tough, right? Eric Brash to come in against
Utah,
yeah, or Spencer, excuse me, to come in against Utah. It's tough, and so, you know, shaky ground. But on top of that, you don't just lose Chase. You also lose a bunch of O-liners, mm-hmm. right? You lose guys coming in like Craig, like Jenna Williams, like before the season ever starts. And then you get injuries. Del Toso is hurt and Cefela is hurt. And like those guys set the tempo for the entire team, period. The attitude of your football team reflects directly back the center point. You know, you talk about a black hole, right? The center of that is your offensive line. That's what sets the tone for everything. And so if they are not right, your team is not right. And so getting Cefela back, your center, makes the call, smart guy. That's a huge difference. You get Chase back, right? Now your leader and your center are back at the same time. And it makes such a huge difference in your football team. And so when that came back together, right, you just see it all kind of shift. It's like one of those puzzles that's three levels, and all of a sudden it shifts into focus when it comes back together. Team starts playing football again, and they look great. They look good against Stanford. They look good against UCLA. Not great, but they look good, right? Mm-hmm. They got it done. They won games, and they did what they had to win games. And that's a huge, huge difference maker for this team. And again, overcoming adversity is another thing that adds to that puzzle of confidence, everything else. This team overcame adversity this year. I was incredibly proud of Chase Garbers. I mean, I really am. I was one of the guys, I'm a quarterback, I'm an analyst. I watch the game and I call it like I see it. I was one of the guys who said, is it time? You know, is it time that we move on at quarterback? Because he's not getting it done. Not because of the kid. I never dislike kids personally. But when I make that call, I make it as an analyst. And he wasn't getting it done. And then Ole Miss. And I am so proud of that kid. I got to tell you, for what he's done, the adversity he's overcome, the toughness he's shown to come back from the injury, he has just had a great year. So to me, that's the story of the whole team, right? The toughness, the adversity to get through that rough spot, and then come back out and win the last couple of games and earn a bowl game. It's huge. And it's great for the program. It's a very Cal team. Having been around it a lot, it's a very Cal team. And that makes me proudest more than anything, right? These guys are Cal gentlemen. And that's a huge piece coming from a guy who loves the university. I have the block C on my arm. I love this place. And watching these guys, having them get their piece of it, it's pretty cool.
You've been on record and saying this multiple times, but you don't, in general, like defensive guys. You're a quarterback, right? And they hit you, okay? So you're not going to like them.
They're not very smart either.
And they're not very smart. At Cal, they are, but in some places, maybe they're not. But what Evan Weaver has done, not just this year, but a guy that was, I mean, he was a good player in high school. You know, he wasn't a five-star. Wasn't a four-star.
Right.
Gonzaga prep. And then he comes to Cal, prior coaching staff. They start him at defensive end. And then when Justin and Tim DeGruyter come in, they move him, first of all, to outside linebacker, and then they move him to inside linebacker. And the guy is now a consensus All-American.
Except for, of course, Pro Football Focus.
And Sports Illustrated, yeah. But anyway, and to be a consensus All-American, you've got to be a first-team All-American on, I think it's at least four, maybe five, of the most recognized lists. What this guy has done and what this guy has meant, not just to the defense, but to the team as a whole, to be the vocal leader, the spiritual leader, the physical leader of a team going to a bowl game, has been remarkable to watch. As an analyst, as a former quarterback, what have you most enjoyed about in watching Evan Weaver?
So, to correct the record, I like defensive guys. I don't always respect defensive guys. Okay. It's just, you know, they're cavemen. They're big, dumb guys that run around and hit people. That's what, what do you do, chase ball, hit people? That's, you know, but that said, not at Cal, not at Stanford either. You know, the smart schools, defensive guys are solid, right? We had Jarrett Willard, who was awesome. I used to mess with him all the time. Smart as they get, you know, chase football, you know, that kind of thing. I'd love giving those guys heat because you have to have competition. If you're not competing, then you're not a football player. Now on to Evan Weaver, right? Evan is a stud. I absolutely love him. And since this is a podcast, I will say this. Evan Weaver is exactly the prick that you need on your football team because you need that guy, right? I was a little bit of that guy when I played. I was a bit of a prick. Azeem was. Steve Gordon was on the offensive line. Those guys who set the tone, and they don't just do it by yelling and talking. You got a million guys who can yell and talk, but they go out and back it up with action. The reason Evan Weaver is as good as he is not physical. It is because he has incredible heart. He has incredible mental toughness. He has the ability to push his body beyond the bounds of what self-preservation says that you should. You have to overcome one of the most intense instincts in human nature to play like he does. And he has the toughness to be able to do that. He gives effort on every single play. Even when he feels like he's about to die, he's going out there and making effort. Now, that said, he's smart, right? He's savvy. He's physically talented. But it's the toughness, the internal motor that you very, very rarely find. That's why there's only a couple of those guys that you remember back to these guys that you see him. You know, Walter Payton is one of those guys. Steve Entman, when he played at Washington, was one of those guys. Just a high motor. The Energizer Bunny. The guy who never quits. They are relentless. And that's what Evan Weaver is. And on top of that, you add the intelligence, right? You add the fact that he is always in the right place at the right time. He's getting everybody else on the same page and the prick you need because now everybody has to listen to him. And he's not just leading with words, but he's leading by example. And those are my favorite kind of leaders because anybody can talk the talk, but who can walk the walk? And Evan Weaver does it. And that's why teams have to live up to what he's doing. And I appreciate that about him. I knew he was going to be a good football player after watching last year, right? You knew he was going to be really good. He has even surpassed, I think, our expectations for that this year. But there's a couple guys on this team that you can be really proud of as Cal gentlemen. And he's one of them, no doubt.
When I watched his tape coming out of Gonzaga Prep, you just knew he was a football player. He could play the game.
Period. So under-recruited. Not just him. Football players are under-recruited. Let's talk recruiting, okay? Let's talk recruiting. This is for everybody out there who asked me about five stars. Stop it. I don't care about blue chips. I don't care about five stars. Yeah, some dudes are just way talented, and you can see it show up on film. I want to recruit football players, period. We had one of the worst recruiting classes in the Pac-10 my freshman year here with Bruce Snyder. I mean, all of our linemen were undersized or in short or too light. And Troy Ozine was like a buck 57 or something when he came in. I give him heat. He tells me, oh, it's 230, whatever. He was skinny. He was a beanpole. But they were football players. And they grew to be, they did the work. They evolved into the players they had to become. You know, Troy Ozine started at left tackle in the Pac-10 at 242 pounds. Literally. As a redshirt freshman. So I don't care about stars. You have, just like the people who didn't vote for Evan Weaver for All-American, they didn't do enough study. They didn't do enough research. They didn't see Evan Weaver play football. The people who are giving out these stars are on the East Coast. How the hell are they watching high school football out here? Yeah, I know we have the internet now, but you're not watching enough of it. And how can you compare a linebacker at De La Salle to a linebacker at Mitty to a linebacker at Bosco Prep in Pennsylvania? It's all different. And so coaches have to watch film. They have to pick the guys that they want that fit their system. And they have to pick football players. If you're just picking by stars, you're never going to have a championship team, period. And you're not going to have a team that you want to be a part of. Because a lot of those guys are it's hard to deal with. Let's just put it that way. I don't want to knock them all. But a lot of those guys are hard to deal with in the locker room. But if you pick football players that match your team, and we just got out of a really good discussion with, you know, Coach Wilcox about Cal guys, and he owns it. He knows it. He gets it. I'm telling you, as a guy who's been here, played here, been around it, he gets it. If he's picking guys, you're getting the right guys for Cal.
Because he was one of those guys himself.
At Oregon, without a doubt.
He was a guy at Junction City High School. He was a quarterback and a good quarterback, but he wasn't getting, you know, Alabama offers, this, that, the other. He was that kind of a guy, right? Even though he came from the, you know, his stock was good. And his brother was like that.
Right.
Josh Wilcox.
Fullback, man.
Fullback, tight end kind of a guy. Yeah. He was the most important. He was the Evan Weaver. And I tell this to Justin all the time. Josh Wilcox, Justin's brother, was the Evan Weaver of Oregon's Rose Bowl and Cotton Bowl teams when he played in the mid-90s. He was a vocal guy. He was quotable quotes. He could have been on Jeopardy. He could have had a column, quotable quotes for 80, Alex, right? But he backed it up with his play. He was a tough guy. And that's what Josh did for Oregon at that time. And that's what Justin, as the head coach, is doing with this football program. He's getting tough guys that love football. They don't play football because people like watching them or they like people watching them. They play football because they love the game of football. And he's getting a lot of those guys into the program.
Toughness first, period. Toughness first, coachable second, and then everything else. Intelligent, right? Maybe that's somewhere in there. Those top, let's call those the top three, right? The holy triad: toughness, intelligent, and coachable. You have those three things, then the other stuff falls into place. You know, I would rather have a team full of sixes that are all tough, coachable, and intelligent than a bunch of superstars that run the asylum. And so give me those tough, coachable, intelligent dudes. They make the best football teams, chemistry-wise, I mean, everything. They just make the best football teams. And that's literally where Cal needs to be. Yeah. You know, you're going to have some 8s and 9s, and you'll get those guys that come through and they play Javid Best, you know, Marshawn Lynch. You think about those guys, Russell White when I was here, Sean Dawkins. But you build a team full of smart, coachable, tough 6s, boy, that's a fun team to be a part of.
Fun teams to watch as well. Fun teams to cover as well, coming from a media standpoint. All right, buddy, we appreciate you taking the time. Great insight as always. A good week of practice, hopefully. Hopefully kids have some fun. But they'll be focused, having talked to Justin, they'll be focused for the bowl game. The 8th win is a big deal for this group. And with that senior leadership, guys like Weaver and so forth, they'll be ready to roll. All right, we'll see you in the broadcast booth, Levi's Stadium. Appreciate it as always. And as always, go Bears.
Go Bears. Always great to join you. I'm excited. My first time here in the podcast. It looks different than I thought.
Yeah, we're in a little bit of a cave here, but but the nice thing about audio, you can be just about anywhere.
That's what I was trying
if
to
it sounds good,
I was
it's
to
good.
The mental picture. Leave them guessing, right? It's a cliffhanger. Definitely. Todd will tell you what it looks like when we come back.
That wraps it up for the podcast. Hope everybody had a great holiday. Happy New Year coming up. And we hope to see everybody down at Levi's Stadium again. We'll be on the air noon with the pregame show, 1 o'clock kickoff, the Bears against the Fighting Illini of Illinois. So for Justin Wilcox, Mike Pawlowski, I'm Todd McKim. Thanks once again. We'll be back next week with basketball as we get ready for Pac-12 play, the men and the women. Until then, I'm Todd McKim. Thanks for joining us. And as always, go Bears.
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa playsets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.